Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, world. Welcome once again to Tuesday Talk with Key West Lou. I am your host, Louis Patron. Well, it's been another wild and woolly week. We live in a crazy world. I say it every week. Things are happening and things are moving fast. Some are dangerous, some are happy, more dangerous than happy. The purpose of my show is to share with you some events which have occurred, give you my opinion on them, and in some instances to share with you information that our national news media, our television, newspapers, magazines, radio do not share with us, whether it's because they're owned by corporate America or because of government influence not to tell certain things to us, share certain information with us. I don't know, but I can tell you this. Go to Canada and spend some time, or go to Europe, spend some time in Greece, Italy, or England, as I do, and read their newspapers, okay, and watch their English television, and you will find that their perspective, their viewpoints on the same things that are happening in the United States are totally opposite from ours here in this country. That's when our country lets us know about these things. And then they are reporting on a ton of things, these foreign media outlets, that we never hear about in this country. And so I guess what I'm trying to do is just share with you some things that sort of hit me, and I wonder if maybe you didn't know, and I believe you should know. I want to start, though, and I would be remiss if I did not, with the Final Four with basketball. Yeah, last night was a big evening in the United States. The Final Four, the best two college teams in the country playing against each other for the national title. Duke and Wisconsin, two great basketball teams this year. I think Duke won 30-some-odd games and lost three going into last night's game. Wisconsin won 30-something and only lost one. Someone had to win, someone had to lose. Duke won. It was great basketball, outstanding basketball last night, especially the last 5 minutes. Duke was up by three. This was a close game, 1 or 2 points throughout the entire game, except in the middle of the second half, Wisconsin was winning by nine. With 5 minutes to go, Duke's got a three-point lead. Duke's coach decided to slow the game down. And that worried me because they didn't have it locked up with 3 points. I could see if he had 10 points. And so they brought the ball down, and they didn't take the shot till 7 or 8 minutes had expired on the time clock. Well, it must have worked because they won. They won by 5 points finally. Now, an observation I made last night, and one that I've been making for some years now in various fashions. I always think when I watch these college people playing basketball, I'm going to call them kids tonight because they are, as you will see as they go along. These college kids, they look like men. They are huge. Some of them are 7 feet tall. All of them are generally over 6 feet, 6'3", 6'4", 6'5 is the common height. They're muscle bound. You can tell they work out every day and have been doing so for years. They're just gigantic people. Never get to hear them talk, really, though. After Duke won, the Duke team was interviewed on the floor where they played, on the basketball floor before the presentations. And then they were interviewed in a room later on where they sat at a table and the news media were out there shooting questions at them. And it hit me. These aren't men. These are kids. They're only 18 or 19 years old, because those of you who are aware of how basketball is played in the United States, and I say it that way because I know there are people listening from Greece and Italy tonight to the shows they do every week, they look like kids when they're interviewed. And they're not wise guys. They're just good all-American boys. That's all, the only way I can describe them. They're kids, all-American kids. They're humble. They're pleased they won. Great coach. It was a team effort. We worked hard all year. I was taken by their responses. And so it was like, you know, the light broke for me, and I saw they still are children at 18 or 19. Appreciate that most of the kids that played last night were freshmen, okay? And that means there's at least four of them that played last night for both teams that will not be playing college ball next year, because in the United States, very few athletes get a four-year degree. They come, they play for 1 year, maybe two, and then they go to pro ball if they're good. Well, at least four of the kids playing on the floor last night four from the two teams. They will not be playing college ball next year at this time. They will be multimillionaires, having been signed up by professional basketball teams. Multimillionaires. Four of those kids are probably going to go in the top 15 or 20, maybe the top 10. That was the quality of the athlete we saw last night. And then I say, you know, they're too young to get that kind of money. At least let them finish college. That used to be my perspective on all this. So they have some mental acumen, some mental judgment as to how to handle that kind of money. Because we read the stories of many of these people. They get to be retired at 40 and 50 after signing a bonus for $6 million or $7 million to start playing, get paid $5 to $10 million a year, and they're broke because they don't know how to handle their money. But I don't think that applies anymore. I thought about it last night in depth. I said again, let them get their college degree. Now I say, we live in a terrible economic society today. The world's upside down when it comes to money. We all know this, all right? The world's in trouble economically. Forget militarily. We're in trouble economically. And if these kids have an opportunity to make that kind of money at 19 years of age, well, God bless them. They should, because they have a talent. They can put that ball in the basket. That's simple. And that's worth money in our society, because people want to watch this. And why not? They should have it. They'll also, suppose they break a leg or something happens if they stay for 4 years and they can't play anymore. They're not going to make millions of dollars over the course of their lifetime. They will be lucky if they earn $1 million total over the course of their lifetime. So why deny these young people of the opportunity to make a very big dollar? So that's the way I see it, and I just wanted to share these thoughts with you. Now, let's move on. I want to talk about money. I'm going to stay with money for a moment. You're aware, I read an article, a newspaper column once a week. It publishes on Wednesday, that's tomorrow, in a newspaper here in the Florida Keys that extends from Key West all the way up to Miami. It's read, it's actually three publications now. I'm not syndicated, but I'm in three publications. All they could publish tomorrow. And I wrote an article that's coming out tomorrow on how money corrupts. And I limited the scope of my article to politics, government, how money corrupts in that area. And I was motivated to do so by Senator Robert Mendez, Democrat of New Jersey's indictment last Monday on corruption charges. So let me point out to you just one small way which has become major, one facet of how money corrupts in our government, in the hall, all the way up, in the halls of justice, on the floor of Congress. Back in the 1970s, early 1980s, this was a liberal country. This was a democratic country. The Supreme Court was liberal. Today it's conservative, 5-4. It was liberal. And there were a handful of people at that time. Who motivated them, I don't know. But they were conservatives, far to the right conservatives. Whether it was the corporations and the rich that motivated these brains, they were legal brains, actually, these people, or what, they started the Federalist Society. I don't know if you ever heard of the Federalist Society. They started the Federalist Society, and they put it in all the law schools. It started at Yale, Harvard, and Chicago law schools, and then spread within a couple of years across the country. And what they did in this Federalist Society was meet with these people and push and drive into their minds that the conservative way was the way to go and not the liberal way. And they've been very successful at it. Let me point out that some of the men who were involved at the beginning in the Federalist Society, you'll know these names: Edwin Meese, Attorney General of the United States at one time; Robert Bork, federal judge who was nominated for the Supreme Court, but the Democrats shot him down in committee; Antonin Scalia, present member of the Supreme Court. Like, I bleed orange for Syracuse University. I don't know what color he bleeds, but he bleeds the color of the conservative way of thinking. Clarence Thomas, another conservative, a black man, put on the Supreme Court. He was a token representative for the Afro-Americans on the court. He is so conservative, it's disgusting. What bothers me about him is I don't think the man is too smart. I know he's on the Supreme Court. Judges ask questions in the Supreme Court. I think he's asked a total in 15 years of 6 questions. He does not ask questions, which shows something lacking. Then there's Samuel Alito. He's on the Supreme Court. He's an ultra-conservative, and he and Scalia, they work together. And over a period of time now, our court has changed, so it's basically 5-4 conservative. They succeeded. The Federalist Society is still going. They succeeded. They changed the minds of attorneys, young guys who now have been out in the profession, 35 years, and they're exerting an influence with this conservative way of thinking. Now comes Citizens United. The Supreme Court decision decided in 2010, which basically said, under these circumstances, corporations are a person in the decision. Corporations are a person, and you can't deny a corporation the right to express itself in a political campaign, and the way the corporation does it is with money. That's their voice. And we can't limit them, and just because they have all this money, we can't say you can only spend $2,000 a year. We can't confine them in any way. Let them spend whatever they want. All of a sudden, the floodgates open. Now corporate America, the rich in America, could make multi-million dollar multi-million dollar political corporations. It has to corrupt. When that kind of money is out there being given to candidates, it has to corrupt. It's human nature. It's just human nature. Which now brings us in 2015, 5 years later, to Senator Robert Menendez. Senator Menendez, his story. Democrat, New Jersey, first elected 2006, has been around a long time. Served 2 years as chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee. He's no kid on the block. He's no new kid on the block. He knows what he's doing. He ran for re-election in 2012, and he won. He has a friend, a Florida doctor, an ophthalmologist. He claims it's his friend. And the doctor says, I am Mendez's friend. Whether they are, in fact, remains to be seen. Anyhow, they come together before the election in 2012. I don't know when they first met, but the good doctor in Florida is under investigation for $9 million of Medicare fraud, overbillings, $9 million of Medicare overbillings. And he talks to Menendez, give me a helping hand, et cetera, see what you can do. And at the same time, the good doctor made a $600,000 contribution to Menendez's campaign in 2012. He did it in 2 months. $300,000 and then $300,000. And interestingly, within a matter of 1 or 2 days, there were emails or letters going back and forth saying, now you got to help me here, this one's pressing me, et cetera. The good doctor also had girlfriends in other countries that he wanted to bring in here, and they're labeled as girlfriends in the news articles. And he leaned on Menendez to help him with that, and the senator did. Also, Senator Menendez took advantage of the doctor's private jet and used it to fly all over the world. All over the world, he's flying on the doctor's nickel. And even better, Senator Menendez is vacationing in the most exotic places in the world. He's staying at the very best hotels, the very best resorts on these beautiful islands all over the world. And he doesn't pay a penny for it. It's all on the doctor's tab. Well, to me, the man is corrupted, if these things are true. Menendez is corrupted. And what was he corrupted by? Money. It starts with the $600,000, okay? You got a $9 million problem. Washington can solve it. I'll look at it for you. I'm sure that the senator didn't ask for that money, but somehow it came into him. And what are you going to do? You get $600,000 in a contribution. You're not going to try to help the man who gave it to you, most certainly. And that's the story of why I believe money corrupts. I want to talk about water now in California, as we all know from news releases in the last month, especially in statements by California's Governor Brown. They have a water problem of major magnitude in California. we see pictures on and videos on the internet and newspapers of the ground caked up and dry and broken up. Places where there were streams, there's no streams. It's just dried up, crusty earth. And got to do something. And so Governor Brown came out last week and he says, all right, first thing I'm doing, I'm going to deal with this thing. Everyone is going to use 25% less water. Well, that's a good way of starting. We had this problem here in Florida about 15 years ago, and I know what we had to do here before the water came back to Lake Okeechobee or whatever it is up there, Okeechobee. The problem is, who is going to be reduced 25% in California? Because there are big companies that use a lot of water, and no one's talked about them. We know the people, the homes, the residential people are going to be cut back 25%. No one's talking about a company like Nestle's. We all know Nestle's, not just from chocolate milk. Nestle sells bottled water. Any supermarket you go to today has several feet of just, what, a dozen, two dozen, you can buy four dozen, it breaks your back to pick them up, bottles of water that they're selling. Well, it just so happens that one of the places where they get the water and they bottle the water is Sacramento, California, okay? And the water they get there from the Sacramento aquifer, which they clean up if it has to be cleaned, they put in a plastic bottle and they transport all over the United States, maybe all over the world, to sell, comes right from California. And it totals, the water they use every year is 80 million gallons, which apparently is a lot of water. It sounds like a lot, relatively speaking. I don't know that much about water, but from what I read, that is a lot of water. Well, last Friday, a bunch of environmentalists and activists formed a human barricade to keep people from entering the premises of the Nestle's water bottling plant in Sacramento. And they were successful because they said until something's done with Nestle's, nobody should work here. Nestle's has to cut back and pay also. And these environmentalists and activists also blamed City Hall. They said because apparently Nestle, because they're buying a lot of water, they get it discounted. They pay less than you and I would pay if we were a homeowner in California because they're buying in volume. And that's, you know, that's the law of the marketplace. And they just said this is wrong. To give the water cheaper in the first instance and to continue giving the water now to Nestle's is a form of corporate welfare. A corporate welfare. It's a giveaway, okay? And they want an investigation of this, and the city refuses. The city refuses to provide any information to any outside group so far as to the usage of the water by Nestle's in addition to the 80 million gallons that everybody knew. And so the battle, you know, they're getting together, they're going to fight. I'm assuming the governor's going to do something about this in the next week or so. If he doesn't, he's crazy. He can't side on this. He can't stand on the side of corporate America with regard to this water problem. One suffers, all should suffer. I saw tonight on television. This is ironic. On television tonight, 45 minutes before this show started, it was shocking. South Carolina, a policeman shot a black guy, shot him in the back, shot 8 bullets at him. The police officer was not aware that somebody was videoing the whole thing. God bless America now with these cameras and these cell phones. Anyhow, the video shows the man, the black man, running from the police officer. He's way ahead of the police officer, and the police officer shoots 8 bullets. The guy goes down. Well, the police officer said some strange things along the way here. He said, you know, this guy had a gun. He had a .44 Magnum. I could see it under his belt on the side. I thought he was going for it. He grabbed my laser gun and ran away with it, and I shot him. Well, the video also shows the police officer handcuffing the guy while he's on the ground. He's dead, by the way. Handcuffing him anyhow. And then walking back 50 or 100 feet to his car, and all of a sudden turning around and walking back to the body and dropping something. And when they blew up that something, guess what it was that he dropped next to the body? Ran 100 feet to drop. Was the laser. The laser gun. Okay? It gets better. This is nothing. This gets better. And that's what happened in Chicago. That's Chicago. And that's under investigation. And this thing just happened over the weekend. And God bless the city in South Carolina. They fired the police officer today. And he is being charged with murder. He can get the electric chair or 30 to 100 years, as it should be. Because these killings of police officers of blacks have to stop in this country. This is not a democracy. When things like this can happen, this isn't the good old United States. This is not the United States I knew from my youth. I was brought up to respect the men in blue. Okay, which brings me now to a Chicago shooting that I was going to talk about in any event tonight. And it's ironic that I saw this other thing on TV from South Carolina. We are in Chicago. That time, though, is July 4th, 2014. Last July 4th, this happened. And it was only revealed to the world this past week, which is one of the strange things. 14-year-old boy. 14-year-old boy. He's walking. This is a kid, okay, who, honor student, never been in trouble with the police, never been a discipline problem in school, never was a member of a Chicago gang. And one thing led to another, and for some reason, the kid was down, and the police officer shot him twice in the back, and he died. Well, now, the police officer tells it a little bit different. He says, look, he says, this kid was carrying a gun. And I don't know if anyone found the gun. One of the problems here is the police will not reveal their investigation to anyone up to this point. Everything's breaking loose in Chicago this week. It's hell breaking out. And he also says that when he shot the guy, the 14-year-old, he was running away. The autopsy, the doctor who performed the autopsy, said the way the bullets entered the body and the way they traveled in the body, it was impossible he was running away. He had to be shot when he was down, because of the angle to the bullet holes, okay? But it gets better than that. It gets better than that. Again, the police officer didn't know there was somebody with a camera shooting the whole thing. Actually, it wasn't a camera, one camera. It was a surveillance company nearby that, for advertising purposes, had a series of surveillance cameras up, and they took the whole picture of everything that happened. The police officer, of course, is... camera was not on at the time. Now we got to look at the medical records that have been revealed so far, and they're not many. As I told you, the city is holding on to them. The autopsy report, the doctor who performed the autopsy, two bullet holes going in the back when he's lying down, not standing up and running away, describes the death as a homicide. As a homicide. That's the word he used. However, current record, 6 months later, they talk about this. The autopsy report isn't changed, but the death certificate, okay, one of the records, lists the 14-year-old's death as a suicide. So you got the homicide, which is now a suicide. Two bullet holes in the back. That's how this kid shot himself. There's an independent police review going on. Everyone's trying like hell to get all of the records. The police records also indicate that the shooting of this boy was, and I quote, non-fatal. Well, why the hell did he die? He died right there at the scene. The chief of police in Chicago says this kid was running away when he was shot. He was handcuffed and he died while in police custody. I don't know. All I know is there's a lot of strange things going on. This is another dubious shooting by a police officer of a black person. Again, a child. We get a lot of young blacks killed. This has got to stop. I'm not sure of the solution. It must stop. We know the blame is on the policemen. They can't be quick to gun. We had the quickest gun in the West. Wyatt Earp, Billy the Kid, fastest guns in the West. Well, today our police officers are the fastest guns in the United States, and it must change. It is not correct. Which brings me now to, I'm going to talk about Iceland. Iceland, that little country to the north of us there, sticking out in the Atlantic Ocean a little bit off Canada. I'm going to talk about Iceland. Iceland, understand, it's an icy country. There's no question about it. They have a hotel there. I've always wanted to visit it because it sounds unique. The whole building is ice. Your bedroom, your room in the hotel is ice. The bar and restaurant is ice. It's got to be a unique experience, and I can't believe it's cold the way they've done it. Be that as it may, Iceland had a problem like the United States in 2008. The banks went crazy. Understand, there's only 320,000 people living in all of Iceland. Small country, 320,000 people. They went crazy, the banks, in 2008 and screwed the Icelandic people. They had the mortgaging, they had the wrong things that the banks were betting on. And when everything went bust, the banks and the government said, we must bail the banks out, as we did in the United States. And we, the government, have to give them money so they don't go out of business. You remember what we heard in this country? The banks were too big to fail. The banks were too big to prosecute. Well, they were hearing that in Iceland. And you know what the small group of 320,000 people did? They threw the government out peacefully. They threw out their constitution. They drew a new constitution. They arrested banks, and they arrested bank officers and officials. They tried them in court, and they sent them to jail. What we didn't do in the United States, and they didn't use their money to bail these banks out. Well, that's pretty hot. That's pretty wild. Now, there's another problem that's happening. It's happening in Iceland. We didn't have the, I'm going to say it this way, we didn't have the balls to do what Iceland did, because we were told by the bankers who were running this whole show and advising the government. Again, the Attorney General Holder told us banks are too big to fail. Banks are too big to prosecute. They did it again in Iceland. Don't tell me they're a small country. It was easier. Big or small, you can do these things. They did it. And now we're into a new time here. Since 2011, things have been successful. They turned around, as we have, but they turned around much better in Iceland. But the problem today in Iceland and in the United States, it's just coming out, and we're just reading about it the last couple of weeks, is our central banks. In the United States, that is the Federal Reserve System. Now, everyone thinks the Federal Reserve System is part of the United States. It is not. It's an independent operation. What it does, one of its major job, is to allocate money and issue money. In other words, they're in charge of, really, they don't do the printing, but they order it, and they say, we're going to give this bank so much money and that bank so much money, and they decide how much new money is going to the bank, a certain bank, and how much old money is going to be removed, turned around and given to that bank. Well, it's a problem because the law says that permitted these central banks, the Federal Reserve in the United States, to exist. They said that this was for the purpose, the law, the banks were for the purpose of protecting the depositors, the people. They don't do that, though. The Federal Reserve in the United States, our central bank, the central bank in Iceland, protects the bank. And this, they're investigating in Iceland. They're making noise to investigate it in the United States. I hope we do, because the central banks are useless. And the thought is, let's get rid of the central banks. They don't help the people. And let the government directly allocate the money itself. So we have to see what's going to happen there. That's my show for the week. I got a lot more, but I never get to it. I sometimes think I should go to a full hour, a couple of hours. Anyhow, once again, I thank you for joining me. I hope you have enjoyed the show. I hope I've given you, to some degree, no matter how small, food for thought here. You realize also, I know a number of you listen to the show when it's archived. It's archived on Block Talk Radio. It's archived on YouTube. And you can find it on Facebook under Key West Lou. I also wrote a book, The World Upside Down. I remind you every week. I hope people every week buy it. So I hope you will be one of the ones buying it and reading it with this admonition. If you like this show, buy the book. If you don't like the show, don't buy my book. You will not enjoy it. The book's available on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. Thank you again for joining me. I look forward to being with you next week.